Get ready for all the craziness of small business. It's exactly that craziness that makes it exciting and totally unbelievable. Small Business Radio is now on the air with your host, Barry Moltz.
Well, thanks for joining this week's radio show. Remember, this is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, this is now amazingly show number 501. This episode is provided by Nextiva, the all-in-one communication platform. It's also provided by Square Payroll, the easy way to pay your team. Go to www.square.com/go/SBR. Well, before we talk about today's show, an editorial comment here. After 500 shows, you're going to notice a few changes around here. First, we're on a different radio station. After 4 years at AM 560, we've moved the show to AM 820 in Chicago. I felt that after 500 shows, I wanted to go to a more expanded format with longer interviews and go into more depth with each guest. AM 820 WCPT here in Chicago allowed me to do that. I've also changed the name of the show to the Small Business Radio Show. Well, business, it's still crazy. It's still insane. But I thought this name, rather than Business Sanity Talk Radio, better reflected what we were talking about each week. Plus, I've been advised it's going to show up a lot better in the Google search engine under small business. So, coming up on today's show, we're going to talk to the folks at LinkedIn on how to find the best people for your company. But first, one of the biggest complaints I hear all the time from small business owners is that they hate sales. And this is a problem because only driving sales is your company going to grow. Well, my next guest has a solution for that. Mo Bunnell is the author of The Snowball System, How to Win More Business and Turn Clients into Raving Fans. Over the course of his career, he's worked in nearly every area of business development and used this knowledge to build the Grow Big development system, resulting from years of testing and peer-reviewed research into why people buy and what makes the buying process actually happen faster. Mo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Barry.
So I got to start off by saying, why do people, so many people, actually hate sales? It's probably, next to speaking in front of people, it's probably number two on their list.
I love it. I think that's a great way to start. You know, I think people have this feeling like they're pushing something on someone else they don't want. You know, that whole idea of I'm going to take somebody to a fancy steak restaurant, slide a fancy pen across the table, get them to sign on the dotted line. They're going to hate it, and I'm going to run the other way. And I think it can be the complete opposite of that. Sales can be a wonderful thing if you're focused on authenticity and helpfulness and all kinds of things you and I will talk about. But the first step is for somebody to get that bad, I want to take a shower feeling version of sales out of their head and get the good one in there instead.
Do you think you get that because they have a bad experience from perhaps the used car salesman or the person that comes to his door trying to sell something? That's the way they grew up?
I think maybe so. I think for whatever reason, the word selling or the sales, that word now has this awful feeling in people's minds, a different definition of what it can be. And maybe it was one bad experience they had. Maybe it was movies that have sort of reinforced the cheesy, slimy, back-slapping salesperson or something like that. But for whatever reason, I don't think we can change that definition anymore with everybody. We just have to take one person at a time and train them on authentic, more genuine, helpful-based techniques and get them to sort of, adopt the newer ways, the better ways, and change that definition one person at a time.
You know, I don't even like, Mo, the word sales, because it's like you're selling me something that I really don't want. I mean, I like the word that I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to build a relationship.
That's exactly right. In fact, in our classes and in the book, we use words like business development, client development, relationship development. I'll tell you, Barry, when I first started out, I thought I was going to single-handedly change this definition around the world. And after a couple of years, I gave up and realized that we have to use code words for it. You know, right. Let's just call it relationship development. then somebody doesn't have that negative connotation walking into a book or a training class or a conversation, and we can start talking about doing things the right way.
Yeah, because I think when I talk to people, as soon as I mention the word sales, they kind of go, you know, all brittle on me. They all get kind of nervous. But I say, hey, we just got to build a relationship with customers, and we just need to be there when they're ready to buy. It kind of takes the pressure off of people.
Exactly. And if people can think about how do I help my friend succeed? How do I create a wonderful buy-in process? If we think about it, about creating a buy-in process, if we think about helpfulness, like you mentioned before, then all of a sudden these same activities become wonderful. And that's the mindset people need to have to be successful.
So a lot of times people want to know, Mo, that, well, you know, I got to get them to like me, because they've heard the thing that they say, you know, people buy from who they know, like, and trust. Do people have to like you in order to purchase from you?
Well, I don't know if it's a 100% requirement, but I will say this. You know, in the Snowball System, we have an entire chapter on this exact topic, and one of the key pieces of research is by a researcher named Dr. Jerry Berger out of Santa Clara University. And he has irrefutably shown that deep down in the subconscious, we spend more money and buy more things from people we like. So those soft skills of likability turn into hard results. And what we cover in the book, and we could go down this road a little bit on the show if you want to, is the next question is, well, how do I become more likable?
Right, I want people to like me.
Yeah.
Please,
yeah, gosh,
please, yeah. Mom, how do people like me?
Yeah, well, there's three big levers. One is commonality, finding things in common. And what the research here shows is the more uncommon the commonality, the more important. Barry, you and I both like water. Great, let's be BFFs.
Right.
You know, that's not that uncommon of a commonality. So we've got to seek uncommon commonalities, things we have in common. And that increases likability. That's one out of the three things. Does that resonate with you, Barry?
It does. But I find that some people actually want to have something in common with me, and they kind of make it up. You know, so for example, you know, we tell this great story when we were in India several years ago, and I don't know if you've ever been there to want to buy a carpet, right? So it's a very elaborate process in buying a carpet. They bring you tea, they flatter you, they bring in these carpets, they handle them with care. And so I remember this one time where they brought this beautiful carpet in, they showed my wife, and they're handling it, you know, so carefully. And my wife goes, "Oh, I don't like it." And so the salesperson goes, "Oh yeah, it's trash," and he just throws it off to the side. And they brought it in very carefully, but as soon as my wife didn't like it, they just threw it out. And I think it's got to be authentic, this commonality, right?
Oh, you nailed it. And research by a guy named Dr. Robert Cialdini in Arizona State on likability, he synthesized all the likability research, his own and other people, and he found that one little inkling that someone's being disingenuous takes the whole likability thing and puts it on its ear. Like you immediately don't trust somebody if you get even the smallest inkling that they're not being genuine. So the likability can't be forced. You have to search for the connections, and you can't make them up if they're not there. But if they are there, then we should generally run towards those, reinforce them, bring them up, dig in, ask questions like, "Oh, you were at the same New Order concert at Music Fest in Milwaukee or Summerfest in 1988 on the Technique Tour. Man, what did you think about it?" As soon as we have that uncommon commonality, people should run with it instead of run from it, and that's going to build that commonality chunk of likability.
So in order to find the commonality, there's so much information, Mo, that's available on the web about people. Should folks do research on who their targeted client is? I'm going to go make a call on you. Should I go on your website, your Facebook page to see what you like, to see if there is a commonality?
No doubt about it. And that's a really powerful way. You know, one really important aspect of commonality is trust, is people that we know in common. So simply being able to walk in a room with a pretty cold introduction somewhere, just being able to say, "Hey, Scott says hi." You know, that the person's immediate curiosity is, "Well, how do you know Scott? Oh, man, well, we vacationed with the family. You know, I noticed you have a connection with him on LinkedIn. How do you know him?" Well, as soon as something like that happens, a true commonality, there's trust, there's an idea of behavioral science called social proof, other people like this person, and things like that are very genuine and can be done through some research up front.
So what are the other two you mentioned?
Mutual benefit and frequency. Mutual benefit is, I think, absolutely fascinating. The research here is by Adam Grant out of Penn, and what he found is the deepest relationships aren't just the ones that are helpful to us, that's sort of table stakes, but they're the relationships that we are helpful to the other person as well. It's almost as if as we start to help other people, our brain rewires itself to say, I must like the person because I'm helping them. And I think the important aspect of that when it comes to business development is that we shouldn't just offer help first. That's very important. We've got to start there. But we should ask for help from prospects and clients and relationships and friends, because the more we ask for help, the more opportunity it gives them to feel good about helping another person, in this case us, and then we can follow up afterwards and tell them how helpful their helpfulness was. Another bonding. So it's really important, Ramon. What do you think of that?
No, I think that's true. I think that probably one of the most important thing that a lot of folks miss, especially in the small business world, is this idea you're talking about of frequency, right? Because I think a lot of times, I mean, I believe that you need to be there when people are ready to buy, and you never know when people are going to be ready to buy. You don't know when they're going to have the pain that you can solve. And I think what happens is a lot of folks go, okay, I once made a call on that person. 6 months later, they should remember who I was. And that's just not the way it works. Where there's so many distractions, you know, from the internet, and there's so many things that come our way, we constantly, I believe, on a weekly basis, have to be in front of them with some kind of message of help, like you were talking about, in order for them to think about us when they're ready to buy. I mean, I call it the maybe pile. I go to buy something, I'm thinking of buying something, I go, well, you know, who could help me with that? And I come up with two or three people. If you can get into the maybe pile, then I think you have obviously more of a chance of closing the business. If you're not in the maybe pile, you have like a 0% chance of closing the business.
Oh, you crushed it. And you actually hinted at some science here that's really important. It's called the mirror exposure effect. The mere exposure to something or a person over and over again makes us like it more. That's the tie back to likability. And what a protomoy list is just, you just take out a piece of paper, write down a list of 8 people that are the most important people to your growth success, your business development success. It doesn't have to be 100, it doesn't have to be 1,000, just 8. And then find a way to add value in that person's life once a month for this year. 8 people once a month. Maybe you send them a TED Talk link. Maybe you text them and ask them how that big meeting went. Maybe you ask them for a favor for mutual benefit points. And just that act of taking your entire network, pulling it down to a very small number of people, say 8, and proactively making damn sure you're investing in those most important people once a month, that is an incredible way to have fun, be helpful to others, and grow your business.
You know, Mo, I love this idea of think about how you can add value. Instead of thinking about, well, how can I sell something to this guy this month, right? How can I add value and then be there when they're ready to buy? I can't tell you how many folks I have in my life where I've stayed in touch with, and then sooner or later they say, you know, I think I can use Barry now, or they're going to refer me to someone. That, in my mind, is really the key. And it takes all the pressure off of having to sell someone something.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'll tell you, one of the things that we see with the protomoy list is the idea of proactiveness. You know, a lot of people feel like, we, you know, with the 252 emails they get every day and the phone calls and running the business, the delivery side and all that, they don't feel like they can be proactive. And the idea of pulling your entire network down to a small number of people that are the very most important and investing in them in any way that's helpful, and preferably it has nothing to do with what you actually sell. It's just sending them a book, giving them an idea, letting them know you're thinking about them. It creates that top of mind effect that you were talking about before. And, you know, we find that with most people that true relationships that really are leverageable, that really drive all their business, it's usually not that many. So pulling down and creating a list of a small number of people that are the very most important and making damn sure you invest in them, that's a fun thing. And over time, it pays off dividends, just like you're saying.
Yeah, people really have to understand that folks don't want to buy your stuff anymore. I don't care how great your product or your service is. They can get your stuff anywhere. They want to build a relationship. They want to have a personal experience. To me, that's what commerce is all about these days.
Yeah. Yep. And I'll tell you, to create a bit more of a system, systematize this, one of the chapter that we were talking about in the Snowball System, it gives a very specific 7-step process to go from target, somebody that I'd like to meet that I haven't met yet at all the way to raving fan, the 7 steps, somebody that's actively running around in the marketplace singing your praises. You know, I love Barry. You should hire Barry. You should talk to Barry. Well, a lot of times people judge our relationships like, Sue loves me. You know, we hug after every time we talk. Well, newsflash, Sue's hugging everyone.
That's right, exactly.
That's not a good benchmark. A benchmark is Sue just hugging you because she hugs everybody? Or is Sue running around telling everybody about you because she loves you so much? And those 7 steps in the Snowball System teach folks how to identify their most important relationships. And when you know where you're at, you know what to do next and specifically how to add value with that person so you can help guide them to that next deeper step of the relationship. It's knowing who you want to invest in and where you're at and what to do next. That's where the power comes in and where the fun happens.
You know, Mo, it reminds me of that John Cougar Mellencamp song where he goes, the lyrics go, "When she sees me, she calls me babe." And then the next line is, "She calls everybody babe."
Yes. Well, you just struck a chord with me. I'm from Indiana, so I grew up on John Mellencamp. So you look at us. We just found a commonality.
There you go. I wanted to ask you about what is the best way to really, and you use this word, which I really like, cultivate referrals. Most people say, I got to get some referrals. You talk about cultivating them. What's the difference?
Well, we've got a specific 4-step process in the Snowball System that talks about how do you properly ask for a referral. So step one, make it important. Loved working together. It sounds like you love the work we did together. I would love to set up a time. Let's take 30 minutes. This is really important. And I'd like to walk you through our referral process because I would love to treat it with the importance it is. So step one, make it important. Step two, when you do get together, have sort of a generic ask, meaning describe what your perfect clientele is like and say, do you know somebody who fits that criteria that would benefit from knowing me? And that's sort of the generic. Step three is do your homework and have a specific list through LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever, Twitter. You're figuring out who you think this person knows, and then you after they sort of have the open or generic ask, you ask for a very specific, do you know the CFO at XYZ company? Well, she would be great. I think I'd be able to help her a lot. And then the fourth thing is the most important, Barry. That is build the referral together. And that turns the whole idea of the negative referrals, like I'm leaning on you to introduce me to your friends. We're going to flip that on its head, and we're going to give a gift, something advice-oriented, not like a gift, like a book, but we're going to give an hour of our time, 2 hours of our time, whatever it is. We're going to build that together with the person providing the referral so they've got that gift, and they're excited, and they're going to get a win when they introduce you to the person that they know. I mean, how does that resonate with you?
I think it does. I just have one more question I want to ask you with our time together, because I think that momentum, Mo, is so important with sales. You know, you see it in sports a lot. When someone's winning, and I hate to use that term because the president always used that term, but when we're doing well, we keep doing well. And we're in a slump. How do you best create momentum for teams?
There's actually research behind this that the power of the winning team mentality or positive momentum is a thing. It's true. and for time's sake, I won't go into it. But the way that you create momentum is a simple 3-step process. And it's fun to say, think big, start small, scale up. So if you're in business development, you want to double your revenues in the next year. That's the think big. But you create momentum by picking the very smallest little tiny thing to get started. That's the start small scope. part. You measure it and you say, I'm just going to ask for 3 referrals or 5 referrals this week, one a day. That's all I care about. It's a win each day if I just ask for that referral meeting. That's all I'm going to do. Nothing else. I'm going to do that. And then that last piece, scale up. When you start small and you get a win and you feel like, gosh, I did that thing I was worried about. I did that hard thing. I asked for the referral meeting, whatever it is. Then you do it the next day and the next day and the next day. And as you scale up, you reach your big goals in the end by starting very small and getting little wins under your belt, getting that feeling of accomplishment, and then doing more and more and more over time. Think big. Start small, scale up.
And I love what you talk about because it is a repetitive process. I was doing an interview the other day and I said, you know, small business should not be a daily improvisation, right? There should be a method to all this madness.
You nailed it. And that's the whole point of the Snowball System. Our book is, you know, everybody sort of falls in love with a craft. You know, maybe they're a cake decorator. Maybe they got online training courses, whatever they've got in their small business. Well, the craft of business development is worthy of study in and of itself. And that's why we wrote the Snowball System, is nobody's out there teaching it in this way that builds momentum and gets bigger and bigger, and that people can learn the craft of growth to the depth that they can learn their core craft.
Well, Mo, thanks, man, on the show. The title of the book is called The Snowball System, How to Win More Business and Turn Clients into Raving Fans. If you want to reach Mo, tell us how we can reach you, Mo.
Go to snowballsystem.com. That's how you get to the book. And we've got a free 8-part video series that tells you all about how to implement the pieces of the book. And that's at createdemandcourse.com. Createdemandcourse.com. You go there, you put in your email, and you'll start getting free videos on how to enact this stuff. And that's the free version.
Well, Mo, thanks for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks, Barry. I enjoyed it.
This is AM 820. We'll be right back.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business.
Whenever I talk to a small business owner, I insist on one function they should always outsource, and that's payroll. You see, payroll is complicated, and both employee and the government insist that you actually get it right. You see, when you do payroll, not only do you have to deduct money from the employee's paychecks to remit to the government, but as an employer, you need to add to it. Plus, you need to send this money to various government departments on a regular basis. And if you don't do it, they will hold you personally liable for it. That's why I recommend the new Square Payroll app. With this app, you can do everything from setting up an account to paying your team. It is fully integrated with Square payments and time cards for W-2 employees and contractors. Square takes care of your tax withholdings, payments, and filings at no extra cost. There's even flexible and transparent pricing that scales with your business. So search Square Payroll in the Apple iTunes Store or Google Play App Store to download the app, or you can visit www.square.com/go/SBR to learn more.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, this is one of those believe it or not moments. We're 10 years in the economic recovery, but it's still a jungle out there. Outstanding talent is still scarce, and it's getting harder for small business owners to find the right people to grow their companies. Here to help is Monica Lewis. She's the head of product for LinkedIn Jobs, which provides technology for companies, big and small, to find and hire winning teams. In her current role, Monica leads several teams working to bring AI and human-centered design to help small businesses hire more effectively and efficiently. Monica, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Barry. I'm so excited to be here. I'm really pumped about all the
Go
energy
ahead.
LinkedIn's bringing to small businesses.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
I was just going to share. I actually started my own career working at small business. My first job, I was on the floor at a retail company in Pennsylvania in my hometown. And after college, I joined a small professional services firm. So I've experienced firsthand the thrill of working in a company where you can make such a direct impact, and also the challenges that come from having fewer resources competing with bigger brands.
Well, I think a lot of people would say that LinkedIn is really helping them and impacting them in what they're doing with their business. One of the things that you guys did in a 2017 study, you found that one of the biggest pain points, and I agree, for small business owners is really finding the right people, because business is all about people. And if you can't find the right folks to build your team, your company's never going to go anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that we've heard, that over half of companies that we've talked to, small businesses say they really just struggle to find enough qualified candidates. They're looking across all different channels like job boards and social media, but they're increasingly needing to go out proactively to find talent to fill those positions to help them solve their own needs and grow from there. But the good news is, another thing that we've seen in our data is that a lot of small businesses are being really successful attracting talent away from bigger companies. 56% of employees at small businesses came from a larger company based on our LinkedIn data. So there's definitely promising potential.
So, Monica, let's talk about that, because I think a lot of small business owners will say, I can't compete with the larger company benefits and what they pay and things like that. Why do you think that small business owners are successful on luring people away?
You know, the small businesses that we're seeing successful are doing a couple of things really well. First, they're showing candidates how they can grow. Our research shows that job changers move because they want growth opportunities, they want challenge in work. So when companies can demonstrate that to candidates, they're going to win. The next thing that they're doing well is just helping candidates understand what it's like to work at their company. It can be done in scrappy ways through, you know, a low-budget video on an iPhone, or getting a new hire to share in a blog post what it's like working there. The third piece is just consistency in communicating what your company's mission is. If you get everyone on your team on the same page about, hey, here's what we're about, here's what we do, here's what's exciting to work here, that story is going to be reinforced every time you engage with potential candidates. So those are the three things we're seeing companies that are successful really do well in attracting candidates. As a small business, you're out there telling your story at conferences, to customers. Everyone at your company has the potential to be a recruiter, and you really never know where that next great candidate is going to come from. So, you know, I work at LinkedIn, so obviously I believe in the power of the network, but would just really encourage business owners out there to always get the word out through their network what they're doing. You never know when the next great hire is going to surface, and I'm seeing great success in companies that when they find the right candidate, they figure out how they can fit in the company rather than just being led by filling open roles.
Right. Because if I find the right person, Monica, I'll fit them in somewhere, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about understanding the potential that they can bring to your business and finding a place where they can help you grow from there.
So, Monica, I use LinkedIn Jobs to look for candidates for my clients, and I noticed just recently you added something called recommended matches, and I've been blown away about how right on LinkedIn has been about this. Talk about that technology and how it really works.
Yeah, really glad to hear that, Barry. What we observed is, you know, today more than ever before, candidates literally have millions of job postings at their fingertips. And we were hearing from our companies using us that small businesses, they don't necessarily have employees with the time and expertise to do that proactive sourcing that they may need to do to be successful. So the way we've been thinking about this problem at LinkedIn is we've really doubled down on how we can just make this so much easier for businesses. We're using artificial intelligence, which is really just helping us understand better when you post a job, what you're looking for. Every time you get an applicant or you engage with a candidate, we learn your preferences and are able to then deliver through this recommended matches feature you mentioned, deliver relevant candidates. So it comes whenever you post a job on LinkedIn, it comes with that product. And the great news is what we're seeing from customers and companies that are using that feature, they're actually starting 50% more conversations with candidates than ones who don't. So excited to see the success that's already bringing for you as well.
And so tell us a little more about how, if you can tell us a little bit of the secret sauce about how this works, because I think a lot of people are becoming more comfortable with AIs, you know, as they talk to Siri or Alexa or something like that. But it still is a little bit scary to some folks. What are some of the metrics behind it?
Yeah, great question, Barry. At the end of the day, what our algorithms are doing is we're just trying to understand, here's a set of candidates that you're looking for. So we get getting into the details, we call it this training data. So basically, there's something you can think about, information that can then just train the algorithm. So when we start to understand, hey, you know, Barry, it looks like you liked this candidate, you reached out to this candidate who had such and such attributes, we can then take that and without you having to tell us explicitly, oh, I want someone with so many years of experience or such and such a skill, we're able to infer that just by the actions that you're taking and build that in to adapt how we're serving you the next set of candidates. So it's really just getting smarter at figuring out what you're after and not forcing you to be so explicit about putting in a search query or something along those lines, and just get those candidates to you faster.
Monica, one of the things I believe that small business owners really miss is, you know, they try to do a good job of branding about what their story is when they're selling to customers, but they kind of miss it when there really has to be some kind of branding story when they're trying to attract candidates, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to be able to help a candidate understand, you know, maybe they haven't heard of your company previously, but help them understand when they do come into contact with your company, what you're about, what your values are. Some of the things that we're seeing, you know, a job description is a common way that a lot of small businesses are first introduced to candidates because they're searching, they're getting recommendations about jobs. We actually did a really interesting study using heat maps to try to figure out what candidates are looking at in a job, and have some insights there that I can share around how companies can put their best foot forward in that manner as well.
Yeah. So what are some of those things?
Yeah. So obviously, as a geek that I am trying to solve this problem, I was so fascinated to see the results. What we found is there are four things that really come out. Candidates, when they're looking at the job descriptions, they're highlighting that text that you put forward. They're looking at understanding, first of all, what work are they going to do? Second, can they realistically get the job or not? What are those qualifications? Third, they want to know what success looks like. And fourth, they want to know how much money they're going to make. Salary range and benefits are far and away the most highlighted portion of the job description. And I would say for small businesses, it's not just about competing on the hard numbers. It's about through that benefit story of, you know, as I mentioned earlier, how can I grow? What challenges am I going to be able to tackle and learn from that really gets candidates excited? And the last thing that I'd be remiss not to mention is, you know, as we've all experienced in our personal lives, mobile phones are an increasingly big part of the experience. We're seeing so many more candidates. More than half of candidates are engaging with job descriptions on mobile devices. So easy thing that a small business owner can do, test your job description. You know, pretend you're a candidate and try applying to the job and make sure it's easy to do that from mobile. LinkedIn, along with many other job boards, offer this functionality. You just don't want to create barriers from good people being able to get through and reach you.
So let me ask you a couple of questions about what folks are really looking for. Do you find that a salary range works, or you should just pick a number?
You know, we see that salary range is, you know, what candidates are often expecting to see. They understand that there's going to be, depending on what specific skills or experience they bring to the role, they're going to understand that it's going to be within a range. So I think that's perfectly reasonable. It'll save the company time and it'll save the candidate's time if you can just make sure before getting into the interview and all those conversations, make sure there's not a big mismatch in expectations. So it's actually a way to help small businesses be more efficient with their time. If you can have that out there, you can make sure that you're not, you know, spending time on candidates who are never going to be able to make it on the salary that you're offering.
So one of the other questions that I always get from small business owners is, how do I actually put up a description or put something in LinkedIn Jobs that only people that are really qualified will apply for? Because sometimes you just get everybody. It seems like, are they applying for my job?
It's a great question. So what I would recommend here is coming back to just making it really clear what the qualifications are and having them, you know, we see a lot of companies use a bulleted list and make it really easy for candidates to just scan through that and understand, am I a fit or not? At LinkedIn, we're also building other features to try to help reinforce to candidates, you're a great fit, you should apply here. Maybe you're not a match, but the best that you can do as a company posting is just make that as plain and simple, clear. You know, don't worry about using long words and explanations and paragraphs. Just get straight into the point and help candidates understand that up front.
Monica, you mentioned one of the criteria is what does success look like? What's an example of what that, I guess, should sound like?
So that's a great question, Barry. I've seen companies do this by helping paint a picture of the impact that a candidate can have in this role, right? So if you're hiring for a manager, help them understand, you know, you're going to be building out a team. This team will achieve, you know, such and such an outcome, you know, help us take on a new set of customers, help us address a new market. So it's really both painting the picture of what's going to be exciting for them, as well as giving them a sense of, here's what I'm looking for. You know, I'm not just looking for someone who ticks these boxes. I'm looking for someone to bring this to our company. So that's how I would think about it. Keep it short and to the point. You know, a couple sentences can help describe it. You can also use other assets like your website or your career page to help paint the broader story of how this role can fit into the broader company.
And when you talk about what last criteria was, whether they can realistically get the job or not, what goes through, in your experience, the candidate's mind when they're trying to assess that?
That's a great question. So what we've heard from when we talk to hiring managers and small business owners is realistically they're putting the set of requirements out there. And in general, they're saying, hey, for candidates that meet sort of 70 to 80% of those requirements, I want to talk to those candidates, right? They're not looking for 100% across the board.
Does the last question I want to ask you is, does the old idea that you should actually go out as a small business owner to your own network, does that still work, or people are just looking at technology tools now?
Great question, Barry. I'd say, you know, at the end of the day, hiring is really about people. So my last thought would be definitely use the network. You know, everyone at a small business, maybe you don't have a dedicated recruiter on your team. Well, good news. I think everyone has the potential to be a recruiter. We hear from companies big and small that the majority say referrals are their leading source of quality hires. It's helping to find people who, you know, who are connected to your company. They already know about the culture. They know what you do. Maybe they even have relationships with some of your existing employees. So definitely encourage everyone to go out and tap the network. Be confident. We see that the majority of candidates, 90% of candidates, are open to new opportunities, and 87% of professionals want to hear from small businesses. So don't be shy in reaching out with your message. Candidates and professionals, you know, ones that are already employed, they want to hear from you. Dive in and start making those connections.
I'm really shocked by that number, Monica, where you're talking about 90% of candidates overall are open to new opportunities. And I want small business owners to hear about this. Just because someone's got a great job doesn't mean they're not interested in hearing about the great job at your place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of interest from professionals to always be kind of tuned into what my next play could be, what maybe is out there that can help me grow in a different dimension, experience something different. It can feel intimidating the first time you reach out, but then you realize, hey, it's just a human on the other side. I actually have something to offer them, right? You're not bothering them. You're offering them an opportunity for how their career can grow in a new direction. Don't be shy.
You know, Monica, I just want to tell everyone that if you're looking for professional candidates, I highly recommend using LinkedIn Jobs, because you're going to find, in my opinion, in my experience, the most professional people. And it's really worked out for the companies that I work with. Monica, where can people learn more about LinkedIn Jobs?
Great. Just hop onto linkedin.com/jobs, and you'll be able to browse and see job descriptions that other companies are writing and hop right in and start posting one yourself. Thanks so much, Barry. Really excited to get to speak with you about this important topic.
I really appreciate the show. And next time you come on, I want you to come up with a name for your AI. Everyone's got a name, right? Siri, Alexa, Cortana.
You know what? That's a great point. Maybe we should call it Barry. I'll check around here and definitely bring that up next time together.
Well, if I read it on LinkedIn, then I'll know where it started right here on this radio show, right?
Exactly.
Monica, thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
Stay with us. This is AM 820. We'll be right back.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva. Is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before with just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications. Get a copy of Barry's book, BAM, where he shows how social media and our self-service world have rewritten all of the rules of customer service. The best marketing now is BAM. Good customer service. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of the book, BAM.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business.
With Barry's 25 years in small business, he has finally discovered the magic formula to make more profit at any company. Business gurus make it seem so complicated, but it is really simple. The formula is P times P equals P, where people multiplied by process means more profit. Learn how you can take a quantum leap in just 180 days to grow the profit in your business. Contact Barry at Moltz.com.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, we've all heard the term word of mouth. It's probably the best marketing strategy that there ever has been. People talking about your product or your service to other people they know by text, by phone, on social media. But amazingly, very few companies have a strategy to ignite word of mouth. Here with a solution is Daniel Lemon, is the co-founder of Selectivore, a food intelligence platform that helps people stay healthy through personalized eating, a former communication leader at Google. He's the author of the online reputation guide, Manipurator. He's been featured in the New York Times, US Today, CBS, Fox News, and speaks in front of audiences worldwide. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I'm so glad to be here.
All right. Well, I murdered a couple of those terms. It's Selectivore?
You didn't murder it at all, actually. No.
I just want to make sure.
Just right.
I just want to make sure. Talk about how you define word of mouth.
Well, you know, word of mouth has been around since cavemen sold rocks to other cavemen. I mean, it's certainly not a new term, but the way we think about it is really the stories and the tales customers tell other customers about our products and our services and kind of the customer experience. So it's that person-to-person or consumer-to-consumer dynamic that makes it really interesting.
And so why does it really matter, I guess, to every single company? I mean, a lot of people say, yeah, well, what's your best marketing strategy? Well, people talk to other people about it, and that's word of mouth. If it is so important, Daniel, why don't we have a strategy around it?
Well, that's just the thing. We studied this for the book that we have just written about word of mouth talk triggers. And what we discovered is something really interesting. About 20% of all purchase decisions people make are directly a result of word of mouth conversations. So if you assume that 20% of your business is directly a result of that dynamic, that person-to-person dynamic, why don't we have a plan or a strategy to make that happen? It's kind of the missing link for a lot of us in the marketing puzzle. We have direct marketing strategies, email, direct mail, social media, but what about word of mouth? So part of the reason for that is it's historically quite difficult to measure, and a lot of it happens offline rather than online. So it's kind of out of the reaches of a lot of software we might use to kind of measure and look for conversation. So there's a number of reasons for it, but you asked such a good question. Why don't most of us have a plan to make it happen?
Is it just, I mean, it sounds like what you're talking about is, well, we don't do it because it's hard.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, and that's certainly no excuse. It's actually not that difficult to make talk triggers, make word of mouth happen. One of the best techniques, in fact, the title of the book we wrote, Talk Triggers, it's giving customers really just material to work with, some kind of story to tell about your business that's just a little bit unique from your competitors. So it's not that it's hard to do. It's just maybe for a lot of businesses, we haven't taken time to stop and think about how to do it.
Well, so give us an example, you know, of a story, because I know like the story that I tell people about when they meet me. The first thing when I say in all my presentations is I've had three businesses over the last 25 years. The first one went out of business. Second one was kicked out of business. And the third one I sold. I paid back the bank, the $1 million I owed them. And I got my wife back just about the same time. So that's the first story that I tell people about me. And I'm hoping that it's going to be somewhat memorable. Is that what you're talking about or something different?
Well, that certainly could be the case. I mean, you're sort of the redemption story for business, it sounds like, which is...
Well, for my wife.
It's a great way to remember you. A lot of the companies we looked at doing this, I mean, one of my most favorite examples, actually, is a small locksmith in the city of New York. His name is Jay Soper, and not only is he the top-rated locksmith in the city of New York on Yelp, he's actually one of the top-rated businesses overall in New York on Yelp, which is no easy task. And his sort of magic sauce, what becomes the talk trigger, becomes the word-of-mouth driver for him, when he finishes an appointment, he, for free, oils all of your locks and hinges and does an entire security audit of your house or your apartment to let you know where you might be vulnerable to entry. And he does that for free with every single service call. And people love that. I mean, they say things, you'll see reviews on Yelp like, my experience with Jay was so good, I almost want to get locked out again. Which is kind of crazy when you think about
that.
It, right?
I love that. I mean, what you're really talking about is I'm doing the service, giving your product, plus I'm giving this other stuff to you as a bonus, as added value, and people love that.
People love it, and it doesn't always have to be something extra given for free. There are other ways that we can sort of inspire word of mouth. There's another really great example in New Jersey, an oral surgeon, Dr. Glenn Gorath. And the thing he does is really very simple. Most oral surgeons, if you have surgery, will call you after your surgery to say, hey, how did it go? He decided that after talking to patients, they would rather prefer to hear from him before their surgery. They're anxious. Mm-hmm. They have questions. So every Saturday, he calls every single patient the following week to say, hey, it's Dr. Gorath. I see you're coming in next week. Do you have any questions I can answer? And that little gesture encourages customers to go out of their way to find him in New Jersey. He's one of the top-rated oral surgeons in New Jersey, and in large part, people do that because they feel that he's empathetic with them.
So what you're really talking about, again, and we've mentioned this so many times in the show, it's about being authentic, about caring about your customers. It's not about stunts or gimmicks or having something go viral, right?
Actually the exact opposite of the stunts and the gimmicks. Those things are hard to, they're, first of all, most customers see right through them, and also it's hard to sustain those over time. You can only give away so many islands or cars or iPads, you know, and so you want to give kind of a sustained long-term story. That's exactly the case.
And so, I love the example of the oral surgeon. I love the example of the locksmith. Give us one more.
Well, I mean, those are both really wonderful small business examples. One of the classic ones, another sort of case study we talk about a lot, is if you've ever traveled and stayed at a DoubleTree hotel.
Yes, I know what's coming up. I can smell them. I can smell them.
What do they give you when you check in at a DoubleTree hotel?
Chocolate chip cookies. And I don't even eat chocolate chip cookies, but I can still smell them just when you mention it.
Exactly. And the crazy thing about that cookie, it's been around for 30 years. They've been doing this for 30 years, and it's just a cookie. It's not an island or a room upgrade. It's a cookie at check-in. But when we studied it, about a third of DoubleTree's customers in the past 60 days have talked about that cookie without even being asked, which is a pretty remarkable number. So we say, well, word of mouth is hard to measure. You sort of have to assume people talk about these things, right? People want to tell stories. So I hope I've made you hungry.
Yeah, you have made me hungry. So Daniel, how do I find the triggers that people, my customers, might talk about? How do you find the ones that you really should own and then promote?
It's actually really simple. The place to start is kind of a customer listening tour. So you go out and talk to your actual customers, and it's helpful to talk to your current customers, for sure. Also, maybe your past customers, and also maybe somebody who chose not to do business with you for some reason. And what you're kind of looking for there are little gaps, little bits of the customer experience for your product, your business, where a little moment of delight would be welcome. It could be a cookie. It could just be shifting a phone call, as Dr. Gorab did, from after to before an appointment. You're kind of looking for those little gaps. And when you find those, you just try to approach that gap a little bit differently and see if customers notice, see if they start talking about it. So it's not a hard science coming up with these talk triggers.
And so what do you do in your business as a talk trigger, Daniel?
Well, it's interesting. This new book I wrote with my good friend Jay Baer, if you see this book in the wild, the actual hard copy, you won't miss it. It's got alpacas on the cover of the book whispering at each other, kind of sweet nothings at each other. It's also hot pink. And so it's kind of the only business book you'll see in the bookstore or in airport bookstores with alpacas on the cover. Definitely makes it stand out.
So definitely the hot pink definitely stands out. So, Daniel, I appreciate you being on the show. The title of the book is called Talk Triggers. Where can people get a copy of it?
Of course, anywhere books are sold, online, offline. Again, it's alpacas on the cover.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show, and please say hi to Jay Baer because he's been a great guest on our show as well.
You bet. Will do. Thanks for having me on.
You're so welcome. And I want to thank everyone for joining this week's radio show. I want to thank our sponsors, Nextiva, the all-in-one communications platform. I want to thank our other sponsor, Square Payroll, the easy way to pay your team. Go to www.square.com/go/SBR. And also I want to thank our staff, especially our booking producer, Sarah Schaffern, our in-studio producer, Michael Leverett, our marketing manager, Courtney Gilchrist. If you are serious this year about being more successful, you got to give me a call. I've set up a private line for that. It's 773-837-8250. Or you can email me at barry@moltz.com. Isn't this the year that you get your small business unstuck? Isn't this the year you finally make the money you deserve? Remember, love everyone, trust the few, and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry Moltz on the web at barrymoltz.com or more episodes of Small Business Radio at smallbizradioshow.com.